So what I want to do today is talk through a little bit about that journey, what I went through personally, what we encourage all of you to think through as you're going through that process, regardless of whether you're a solo shop, just in the process of hiring your first team member, or you do already have that person in place and you're just rethinking the role and the responsibilities and the scope of work that they're doing in the firm. So as Steph mentioned, if you were in the very beginning or towards the end of her session, last time or the intro, the Bionic Business session, right? And this is straight from Jim Collins in his book, Good to Great. Right. The whole idea here is to get the right people on the right seat on the bus, make sure the bus is going in the right direction, but hire amazing people, pay them well, train them right, and just let them rock, right? Get them out of their way. We have a phrase here in our firm that the trust bank is full. The trust account is full on day one. And it's up to you to give us a reason to start spending down that currency. And the team also has as much authority as they take until someone on the team has told them that they've taken too much. That usually starts with me, or as Kathy and John are involved in that right now with our new hire coming on board. Again, we're all kind of in that space. But the premise here, the idea here is that you want to just hire the best people for the job. I know that on a P&L, right, on a profit loss statement, your team shows up as an expense, but I want to really encourage you to all think about the investment in human capital, the investment in a team member to spend a lot of their time with you, with the clients that you're serving, and to make sure that you're hiring them for the right job. The worst thing that can happen is you put the wrong person in the wrong seat on the bus. Maybe they belong on the bus, but they're just in the wrong seat. Nobody wins in that situation. They aren't feeling fulfilled in their role. You're not feeling fulfilled as a leader. Sidebar, I think there's a really big difference between a manager and a leader. A leader is someone that just, again, empowers people to make decisions on their own, solving for the common goal and the common mission and vision of the firm. Managers, in my limited experience in the professional world, I just always kind of thought that as professional babysitters. Like, I don't want to manage people. I want to manage a business. I want to manage processes and systems, but I want to lead people. And I think there's a difference between those two. So again, hire the right people, get on the right track, and get out of the way. However, before we do that, we first must understand what it is that we're solving for and what we are hiring for, and create the job description that can fit into that role, right? So one of my favorite phrases, I'd rather put more time on my watch than gold in my pocket, or a variation of that. That is another one of my phrases. With more time, you can make more money. With more money, you cannot make more time. And the biggest mistake that I see advisors make in this decision-making matrix is they think, well, I can't afford to hire someone. On the contrary, I would assume that outside of buying a book of business, most advisors are running debt-free practices. I would hope that we are. There's two areas that I would feel 100% comfortable in an advisor spending money and taking out, right, using leverage, using debt in the business responsibly. Number one is hiring a team member that can take responsibilities off your plate that are not revenue generating activities, that are not the best and highest use of your time, and that are not fitting your unique ability in what is the best and highest use of your time in the firm. Because again, go back to what I just said, with more time, you can make more money. With more money, you cannot make more time. And I've seen advisor after advisor after advisor after advisor, present company included, at a time in my life of saying, well, I can't afford to hire someone. And my response is, no, you can't afford to not hire someone, because you can never expect to get above and beyond where you're at right now, because the finite currency that we all have to spend is time. And so my somewhat snarky rhetorical response to that is, well, what's going to change in your life between now and the next 6 months that's going to cause you to be able to hire someone? And the response is, well, I'll make more money. Like, okay, agreed. But isn't there a way to accelerate that timeline? If you know that you're going to make more money and you know that there is a return on investment in that team member, then why would you not accelerate that, take out some working capital right now, hire that person? And I promise you, for the couple hundred dollars or maybe a couple thousand dollars in interest expense that you would incur on that capital, you should be able to generate a much higher ROI in that person than what you would pay in interest expense. So that's the first one, slight digression. The other reason that I would say to take out capital is for a very clearly and well-defined and articulated marketing plan. because we know marketing is a slot machine. We know that if we put in X numbers of dollars of coins and we pull that lever, we get the result, we get the output from that process. The mistake on the marketing side of things that advisors make is they just spend money on marketing without an intention, without a plan, without a game, without a course of action, or clearly defining what the result of that plan is supposed to be. So again, this isn't a marketing conversation. That was the other answer. I didn't want to leave anybody hanging there. So again, the idea here is to nurture this person into the position where they can free you up to you to do your best and highest use of time. Paperwork, again, I hope I'm preaching to the choir here. At this point in your limitless journey, as well as just as a, in whatever scope in which you're operating your practice, that doing paperwork is not the best and highest use of your time. Best as an advisor, right? Making phone calls and doing confirms and all of the other support level work that is very valuable and very important in delivering the client experience that you want to have. But just because it's important and valuable does not mean that it needs to end up on your desk. That's where you build a team and you empower your team to make those decisions and take those actions. Because side note to that, what it also does is it builds competitive immunity into your practice, because clients feel a sense of attraction and a sense of purpose in working with a firm than they will if it's quote unquote just you as an advisor. So again, just tuck that into your mind as well as you're thinking about the client experience and the way in which they interact with your firm. So again, how do we get over that? Well, we first need to clear off our mind. We still need to get out of our own way from a mindset standpoint. These are the common rebuttals and considerations and hesitations that we'll hear from advisors as it pertains to why they can't hire. They don't have the time to train. They don't have the, I'm so busy right now. How am I going to find time to train person? That's an easy response. You just have them shadow you. That's what Kate's going to be doing when she starts next week or this week and into this week. And then next week when she's remote, she's in Virginia Beach. And we can talk a little bit more about that here in a later part of the conversation today. But she'll be in every single client meeting. She'll be shadowing us either virtually or in person for the foreseeable future. We've got a whole training plan mapped out for her in the context of what it means to onboard. But that's how you solve for time. You're already doing the tasks anyway. Just have someone else sit over your proverbial shoulder and watch that. The value, don't knowing the true value of time. Again, this goes back to just understanding, go back to your, what does your model practice look like, right? Dollars of revenue, number of clients, client service per year. You take that through the equation and you can figure out what your hourly wage, what your hourly impact is within the practice. Anything that's less than that from an hourly standpoint that you could surround yourself with a team member to do is arguably a task, a project, a responsibility that should be delegated. One of my favorite phrases from the 4-Hour Workweek, that book that Tim Ferriss wrote back in 2007, which a lot of it is still applicable today. Some of the actual strategies that he uses are a bit outdated, just given what technology has done what the economy and geopolitical landscape looks like and everything. But one of the principles was never delegate something that you can automate, never automate something that you should eliminate. And I can kind of pull that full circle around in the elimination of tasks. The first thing that you should consider is, am I the best person that should be doing this task? If not, then I should delegate it. And if that thing that I delegated could be automated, great. Now let's figure out how we can use technology to maybe help us in that process. And a little bit later, I'll talk about some of the things that we're looking at here in the firm to help reduce the workload on our team's plate and use some of the technology that's coming out to potentially streamline that for us. So we've all, I don't think Steph mentioned it in the intro, but there's many different models that you can build as it pertains to your firm structure and the org chart. It starts obviously with creating with you as the advisor, and that is hiring that first person, right? We go back to that delegation list. We go back to the ABCs and 1-2-3s of what can be offloaded and shared with another team member. As we continue to grow the firm, then there's all kinds of different options that you can have. One of our favorite ones that we're building a version of here in the firm is Angie Herber's Diamond Team model, right? Purely from a service standpoint or from a client's advice standpoint, right? There's the operation side of things, and then there's the client relationship and the investment and the advice side of things. The advice side of things on the screen that you see here is the right side. The operations, et cetera, is on the left side. So I would consider the left side of the screen being working on the business and the right side of the screen being working in the business. So we are building towards a diamond team model here in our firm, where if we're familiar with the diamond team, the top person, right? And again, all credit to Angie and her process and the research that she's done with Angie Herbers or Herbers and Company. But it's this idea that me as a lead advisor, and then we'll have two lead, or me as a senior advisor, essentially the rainmaker of the firm, the rainmaker of our client family, two lead advisors, which will each serve about 100 households, and then one, possibly two associate advisors, client service advisors, paraplan. There's all kinds of different titles. It's part of the problem with org chart structure in advisory space, is that there's all kinds of different titles for different types of, all kinds of different titles for the same type of role in an organization. So when I talk about lead advisor, that's a relationship manager. That's the person giving advice. Let's just, the client views that person as their advisor. And then the support person, right? The client service advisor, associate advisor, paraplanner, et cetera, is the one sitting second chair to that advisor, right? That's all in the advice side of things. On the op side of things, that's Kathy Sandbox. That's exactly where she sits. And she's the one, we joke, she's the oil to the engine. She's air traffic control. She is the master plate spinner in the organization. Her combined with the CRM and combined with the workflows, which again, you've heard me once, you've heard me 1,000 times, it tells us who's responsible for doing what, when it needs to get done, and for which client. The combination of the system that we built, which is what we manage, right? And then the leadership aspect of what we as an organization do for the team members, the combination of those two things is what allows Kathy to deliver on the operation side of things and make sure that things don't fall through the cracks. As we measure capacity, right? That's where we're starting to realize from a firm standpoint that as great as Kathy is, she's still only one person. And so we, I can see only her nodding so her head in adamant agreement there, right?
Yes. There's only so many hours in a day.
Yes. Which is why we're looking at different pieces of technology that are able to complement and potentially complement, dare I say, even remove some of the responsibility that she has been doing on a manual sense. And this is where the basic things of something like Text Expander is a game changer as it pertains to the time that you can save. Kathy, I know during review season, when you're firing off those emails and the notifications for clients, aren't you saving, wasn't the record like 8 hours in a week or something like that? I mean, it literally saved an entire day.
Yes. Yeah, I think Text Expander, as Adam said, is a game changer for operations people. And during those busy client surge review periods, it is an absolute game changer because it saves so many hours, as he stated. We got the notification, we saved 8 hours. That's an entire day, as he stated.
Yeah. An entire day of just doing emails, just typing up basically the same email with a variation of the theme, right? For those of you that aren't familiar, Text Expander is mail merge on steroids. So the combination of something like Text Expander and an automated scheduling like Acuity, I would assume slash hope that most of us are already using something like that, whether it's Schedule Once, Calendly, Chili Pepper, Appointlet, Acuity, I think I said Acuity already, that we're using those things to automate that process. And then you complement that with the ops systems of Redtail and what it can mean to have your entire process documented in your CRM so that onboarding team members isn't as much of a black hole as you might think it would be because all of your systems are already written down. We're joking with Kathy that when she was on vacation once last year, it took me like an hour and a half to do electronic deposit on a check that we'd received from a client because I haven't touched TD Ameritrade check deposit. I don't think ever. I think that was the first time that I actually had to do it. And it took me like, maybe not an hour and a half, but I think it was a good half hour to 45 minutes of doing something simple. But the nice thing was the entire process, Kathy had documented that out inside of Redtail. So it still took me a lot longer to do it, but I at least had the knowledge transfer in place of knowing how she did it within the CRM. But what you're building towards to kind of bring this back on pace here or on point in the conversation is that as the firm grows, and this is where knowing your numbers is absolutely critical and so important. Your business is telling you something. The numbers of your business are a story. It's just written in numerical form as opposed to narrative form. The numbers of your business are telling you when your firm is going to be ready for that next hire and which hire that's going to be. You have to listen to that and determine how what is the next decision that I need to make in my business based off of what the numbers of my business are telling me? And how does that reconcile against the goal and the vision of the firm that I set out to build, right? Just because you can grow more doesn't mean you should grow more. So again, this goes back right back into the beginning lessons that we talk about here in Limitless of what is the model practice that you're building towards? What is the ideal situation look like? What does the firm headcount need to look like to deliver the type of client experience that you want to deliver in exchange for the fee that you're charging for your clients? And you solve for that, and that will tell you what your business needs to look like and the warm bodies, if you will, that you have to have on the bus to deliver that experience. So again, we know firms, there are, and Michael Kitsis has done a significant amount of surveying around this, where some of the most profitable and hyper-efficient practices are run by one advisor and maybe a part-time admin serving 40 or 50 households. Awesome. Godspeed. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that if that's their intention. There are other firms, and we kind of fall into that middle, that are scaling special and trying to grow into this small giant with a very, very unique and hyper-efficient niche or hyper-focused niche, which allows us to be hyper-efficient in the way that we are delivering that specialized experience from the prospecting process, onboarding, all the way through client service, utilizing some of that technology that we had mentioned, as well as the scalability of the service model, because we're delivering the exact same thing for every single client. So it allows us to use some of that technology to complement the human interaction that we have here. So again, there's multiple different ways that we can create that model here, but it starts with one. It starts with that first team member. So again, how do we do this? Well, the easiest way to figure out what you're solving for is to just take that, go back to the time study that we talk about in Limitless, and start a personal inventory, start a time inventory of what you are spending your time doing on an hourly, daily, weekly basis, because you will inevitably build your job description just by taking the inventory of your time. And so that is essentially what you can then transfer into some type of online job description so that you know what it is that you need to offload off of your plate, right? What are three energy draining activities that you can delegate? That's a semi-rhetorical question. If you want to comment about that, feel free to do so, but at least give you the idea to, or that's a seeding question for you to think about where you can take inventory and see what you can delegate. So obviously, like I said, there's a lot of different ways in which you can, growing your team. I will say that my mindset has shifted on this, because I had originally thought that we were going to have a national presence, but a local team. So back in 2019, when this whole optometry thing was working or just in its infancy role, and we were kind of getting that proof of concept, my intention, as we started to add more clients from out of state, I still intended on building a local team. So in 2019, I decided to double the office space and started a build out. We moved into this new space in July of 2020. And as of, when did I list it, Kathy? A week ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that. We got the listing that we're listing the office space and going completely virtual. John, our lead advisor, is down in College Station, Texas. Kate, our new second chair advisor, client service advisor, is in Virginia Beach. Kathy and I, yes, obviously here are local, but when I look at this office space, I have 50% of my office space that's not being used. And just got the notice today, our rent based off of the lease agreement is going up to $2,400 a month, $2,382, I round up. Like, that's just not a very good use of capital in the firm. I'd rather invest that capital elsewhere, determine what the business needs, because we don't need this type of office space to deliver the client experience and the advice that we provide to the clients that choose to work with us. So as you look at where you can outsource or where you can bring that team member in, yes, you can do it in-house, but you can also outsource it and have that be a virtual team member as well. You can have that be part-time. You can have that be full-time. It just depends on what the business needs. Again, the numbers of your business will tell you whether it's in the dollars of revenue that you're bringing in, the quantity of prospective relationships that you have, the hours that you are spending with each client. You have to take inventory of where you are spending that time. What gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed gets improved. So a lot of advisors, I think, sometimes go into this with a little bit of a blind eye, trying to figure out which way is up from down, left from right, when if they took more inventory of what their business is telling them from a number standpoint, it would tell you where you can find that person, or I should say what you're solving for in the business. And then once you understand what you're solving for, now that can give you the pond of where to fish in, essentially, to try and find that person. So briefly, just showcase my journey here. Like I said, Kathy, you were the third office manager that I've been working with, and I made my first hire in 2009, I think it was, just over a year into me being an advisor, right? I started in April of 2008, and I think it was the summer of 2009 that I started with a very part-time person. She was local, obviously, and I think she was at 10 or 15 hours a week. And then the iterations of that have grown. When Barb, who was that number one, she ended up basically retiring. Then Angelina was my first full-time hire. Angelina was with me until she ended up moving out to California to be with family and just do a different calling. And Kathy, you've been here since
2018,
right? Yes. Can you just give a brief backstory of your journey from your perspective in the wealth management field?
Well, that's a great question. I started a way back before I came to you, obviously. I spent 13 years being with a different RIA, which is where I kind of got my experience and welcome into the industry and learning all the lingo and the cycles of all the different aspects that take place in the financial planning industry. Spent a short little stint with a broker dealer and then joined up with Adam. So when I came to Adam, I had obviously a great RIA background, but the main difference that I found between where I was and with Adam was that he utilized technology and integrations to the umpteenth end, which was a change for me, but it was a good change. Like you said, Text Expander is one of those that I extremely share with everybody. Where I wasn't using any type of calendar scheduling. So getting familiar with Acuity. So there were a few things for me to get familiar with, but all of these things definitely created more efficiencies along with the processes that were already in place. So that was a welcome change for me to step into somebody who's using technology to the degree that he is.
And you found the opportunity, the position, I think, through Craigslist, if my memory serves me right.
Correct. So it was on Craigslist.
Not sure how, in all honesty, that might have been the last time that I've used Craigslist. So I'm not sure the...
I think so.
Yeah,
I don't think we used it for anybody else that we've hired.
I don't know where that search pool lands from a priority and a exposure point of view, but it worked. Yeah. And it worked great. So thank you. I appreciate you sharing that backstory. And to be clear, again, when I was bringing the position that I was at my firm and where we were at was already so much more than quote unquote, just that rock star right hand. It was the position was for a practice manager. I wanted someone with experience. I wanted someone that knew what I didn't have to explain the difference. I didn't have to explain what an ACAT was or what a transfer of assets meant and what we needed to do that. And so that was where, again, Kathy checked all those boxes, and it's been a great experience thus far. I know on the right, underneath on this slide here, you might be asking some of those names. Some of those have changed. Some of those have stayed the same. Actually, the only one that's changed is Adam Fout is no longer the content writer. He went on to different things. But my point in this is you can build the virtual team, or you can build your team to both work in and on the practice. Again, just have to understand what you're solving for in your business. Nurture into the rock star. Again, this is where from a hiring standpoint, you don't want to be reactionary to that. You don't want to be feeling like you were under the gun and that you're just shooting from the hip here, trying to hope for the best and go on a hope and a prayer. Make sure what's the phrase? Hire slow and fire quick. You certainly don't want the reverse of that. You certainly don't want to make a quick hire and then, as I mentioned earlier, keep that person on for a longer time period than they should be. What not to do, again, this is where in every hire that we've done, Kathy, with you, with John, and now with Kate, we received a lot of compliments. Now, compliments, maybe it's not compliments, but differentiators of what we stated in our job description, how we wrote the job description. I will, for entertainment purposes and to benchmark it, I will put a link in chat here for the job description that we use to hire Kate. There it is. Click on that, rip off and deploy as you see fit. But we got a lot of very pointed comments about the who we are section. Because again, what you want to do here, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. And the worst thing I think that you can do is to make your job description sound very boilerplate, very unpersonable, very corporate. Again, go back to the core of what we're talking about here. We're talking about another human being. We're talking about someone's life and the time that they're going to spend working with you. You owe it to them to be as transparent as you can up front, to let them know what they're potentially signing up for, to respect their time in the interview process, as well as give you the best opportunity of finding and attracting the right person from the get-go, from the very beginning. And so maybe it's not the worst thing, but I just think you're losing an opportunity to have a positive first impression from the very beginning, from the first sentence that they read, from the first paragraph that they read in your job description. Be transparent and let your personality come out of not only yourself as the advisor / firm owner, but also the firm and what the firm is striving to do, both in who you do your work with, the type of client experience that you want to deliver, how you do that work, et cetera. Use this as an opportunity to showcase that and help, right, attract the right person, because someone that resonates with the way that you talk, there is there's a certain connection that people will have if you let your personality come out in that. Kind of hit on this already, right? The outsource core strength, making sure that you're spending your time. Dan Sullivan in Strategic Coach talks about you spending as much of your time in your zone and the zone of unique ability, right? Just what's the best and highest use of your time. The way you do that is, again, define all of those tasks, responsibilities, projects that aren't fitting that. Because again, if it's not the best and highest use of your time, it's not going to produce the best ROT, return on time, and thus return on investment in the course of the practice. Then you talk through task transition. And finally, again, you just follow the hiring process to make sure that you find the right person. So the job description, like we had talked about, what are you solving for? How are you attracting that right person? And do you have a clear compensation philosophy? There's a lot of different places that you can benchmark off of this. Investment News, Schwab, I believe Dimensional, if you're a Dimensional user, other fund companies might also provide this information on a compensation structure. So there's a lot of different ways. The biggest thing that I would emphasize here is don't be penny wise and pound foolish. Don't skimp on what you're going to do on what you're going to compensate. And I will say that there's also added benefit in what I guess you could call above the line, right? Things that don't necessarily show up directly in a paycheck on, you know, whether it's days off, whether it's closing on Fridays, whether it's just like this, right? I mean, Kathy, I think you can share that same approach or share that same alignment that yes. environment. It's not just about the money, right? It's important, correct. But it's not everything.
And to be honest here, when I read your posting, yes, I checked off all the boxes, every task and responsibility you listed, I already had experience with. So that was a no-brainer for me. But the key element that kind of pulled it out was the work-life balance that associated with the compensation being right in line with things based on my experience. So those two key elements is kind of what pulled yours out for me. But I think the work-life balance / benefits is one of the biggest things that people probably are looking for, because the responsibilities are tenfold across the board, the same in most places. You have to have a few things that identify you as special.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, just some more basic data here that you can go. This is all in the slide deck. I think the slide deck was posted in the very beginning of chat. This will also be available online or within the Limitless profile. There's a couple of different ways in which you can access some of this data, whether it's Glassdoor, Investment News, Schwab, TD, Fidelity, I think, even puts out, I think Fidelity puts out something similar. Lots of different ways in which you can start benchmarking off of what you're looking to pay based off of the position that you're looking to solve for. But again, all that data is in here. As far as the interview, this is where we have a, it's one thing to take something at face value off of a resume. It's another to actually test for that. I learned that the hard way after the hire before Kathy, actually, where I learned that someone's definition of processing paperwork wasn't what I thought it was. I thought processing paperwork was being able to fill out account forms and send those off to clients for electronic signature and process with the custodian. And the hire that I made, her definition of processing paperwork was taking data received from a client, taking paperwork and scanning it. That's it. No processing, like no actual action with it, just scanning and putting it into, hey, this is the client's estate documents. This goes, I process this paperwork and it goes into their estate planning folder. These are investment statements. This goes into the investment folder. That was her definition of processing paperwork. So it's important through the interview process to, yes, ask good questions, right? That's my ownership. If I wanted better answers, I should have asked better questions. But you should also implement a testing process to test for that type of competence and experience. So we evolved that process to, I think one of the things that I had Kathy do was go through an account, a semi-filled account application process. And I intentionally transposed social security numbers from one account form to the other to see attention to detail and being able to connect the dots on things. And then you can test for these things throughout the interview process. And yes, what I would ask someone in Kathy's position to do is going to be very different than the financial plan that I had Kate and John respectively create during the advisor interview process. Understand what you're solving for and the work product that you're asking them to deliver as part of their responsibility in the firm, and create tasks and projects around that to test for the work that they're going to be doing. In addition, it's a really good idea out of everything listed here. Colby is an absolute must in our firm. When we hire someone, you can even go through the Colby process as a hiring office, as a hiring firm, and essentially create a Colby index based off of the tasks, roles, and responsibilities that this person would fill. So you go through Colby and you put in the different types of roles and responsibilities that they would have, and Colby will essentially spit out the profile of someone for that role. So they'll say, based off of your input, you should hire someone with scores of 8, 7, 2, 5, right? And they attach a guarantee that if you hire someone within a certain range outside of that thing, they guarantee that that person will be gone within 90 or 120 days. Like, they are that confident in their ability to match up people based off of the input. So I would really encourage you, if you're still trying to figure out kind of what additional data point can I use to help solve for this, look at that Colby and then see, and then look to reconcile the person that you're interviewing, their score, with the actual role score that you create through that Colby process. The other tool that I like, and this was introduced to me through Strategic Coach as well, it's Clifton Strengths Finder. Just Google Clifton Strengths Finder. It's another index that just talks about how someone thinks about their work and what they care about in the work that they do. The characteristics and traits that they bring to the workplace. So take a look at Clifton Strengths. And again, there's some other ideas, as you can see on this screen here. Communicate. Kathy, I think this is one of the most important parts that we did when we first teamed up was, and the timing of when you came on board was perfect as well, as it was with John, in that we were just rolling into a review season. So can you talk a little bit more about how you felt? I know it's been a while, right? But
it's been a while, but I do remember.
That's a good thing, right? What that onboarding process was.
Yeah, as I mentioned, because I had checked off basically every responsibility and task you were looking to be done, I felt like I hit the ground running. And I did for a couple of weeks, and then I kind of got into the third week where I was really trying to get into the weeds of things and felt just a little taken back. But that was mainly just because of the technology integrations. I wasn't as familiar with those. That was a little pulled back on my own, just from my own perspective, that I wasn't doing quite as well as I anticipated I'd be doing at that point. But the things that helped throughout the first month or so, I think, was our daily check-ins. And I know when we started, we had like 2-a-day check-ins. That was an extremely helpful time or thing to do during the onboarding time, was to just constantly check in with me and see where I'm at. What questions do I have? Because as you know, I try to be very respectful of focus time. I know that I need to focus, you need to focus. So setting up those DCIs that we had gave me an opportunity to at least focus on some things I could get done, but then run through some things and take notes. Your use of Bloom videos as we walked through things, being able to see it and then have something to go back and look at. So Bloom videos are a great way to create a training video or training library, excuse me, for those people that you're onboarding. Because those can be used over and over again, because I know we had John kind of run through some of those videos when he joined. So those two aspects, I think, are very helpful for when you're onboarding a new person.
Yeah, I can't emphasize enough the importance of, again, you're doing the tasks already. Just hit record. Loom is literally a Chrome extension. Just hit record. Use the mic on your computer. We're not solving for Hollywood level production here. Don't worry about editing. Don't worry about... You can even speed up Loom. So if you feel like there's a lot of dead time there, great. The person watching it can put it on 1.5 times and save a little time in the playback. You're doing the task already. It is a very low-hanging piece of fruit when it comes to documenting and institutionalizing the training process in your firm. It doesn't have to be complicated. It just needs to be documented. And that's one of the best ways to do it. The DCIs, we still do, not always daily, but a couple of times per week. We obviously have our standing 3M meeting every Monday morning, our Monday morning meeting at 10 a.m., which, dare I say, unless the office is closed or someone's out, like, that is a non-negotiable time. That is something that we as a firm get together. It's 1 hour per week on the Monday, and it's just closing the loop on things from last week and prepping for things that we have coming this week and into the future, as well as updates on any projects that we're working on in the firm. But periodically, you and I, throughout the week, we will have our check-ins. They've now shifted to more weekly check-ins or once or twice per week check-ins. But as you had mentioned, I think it's important for everybody to understand important doesn't always mean urgent. And things can wait for and, you know, write these down. You'll have a list of things that you have questions for me. And I will, you and I can get together. Sometimes it's as short as 5 minutes. Sometimes it might take 15 or 20 minutes. But we also, when we were talking with Kate, who's coming on board, it was the first time that I'd really thought about it. And I don't think we've ever done a reply all intra-office email.
No.
Like, please don't do that. Please don't begin that. Yes. And even that, in the absence of guardrails, Slack can turn into a version of that office email. Rather, what we will do is we will have something in Asana. We have a team. We have an internal projects board in Asana. We have a parking lot essentially in Asana that is dedicated for our Monday morning meeting. If it is something that is important but not urgent, I'm not going to interrupt Kathy just to tell her something that I could wait to talk to her about on Monday, because I don't want to interrupt her time. There's a time and place for when things need to be brought to her attention. And it's incumbent upon you as the advisor to respect the time of the person that you're working, the person or people that you're working with, because just as focus time is important for you, as Kathy mentioned, it's important for her and for them as well. So be respectful of that. But that doesn't mean that you should never talk, right? You should have those open conversations. And eventually, as you onboard, yes, instead of multi-daily check-ins, you're having a daily check-in and then a weekly check-in with maybe periodic little...
as needed.
As needed. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Or again, talked about this already. I should just keep clicking advance like every 30 seconds because I'm probably just covering the slide. I'm getting ahead of myself here in some of the conversation. Again, I'm just going to keep going past this and make sure that we get that we have time for questions here. As we mentioned, we do have resources in Limitless for people to be able to use. So Limitless and the content, the decks, the templates, the checklists, those are for you as the advisor, but they can also be beneficial for your team as well. So introduce them to Limitless, introduce them to the content that we're creating. Kathy, one thing that I think has been interesting that's come from Limitless has been the, and it's ebbed and flowed, but some of the relationships that you've built with other practice managers from Limitless based firms or Limitless involved firms. And that's been, can you talk a little bit about that experience and what that's meant for you as an office manager?
Yes. So Adam was kind enough to take me along to right there when I first joined to a Limitless retreat, where I met numerous people who are in the same department as I. And when they had a few little sessions for us off on our own, which was very, very helpful because then we could connect and exchange information. And a good portion of us kind of kept in contact, but then initially, just as we were learning different new technology platforms, because we're always refining and tweaking. And so we're moving forward with technology. And that was helpful because sometimes someone else had already had experience with it and could kind of give us some quick little ideas of this is a shortcut or this is a good direction to go or don't go down this rabbit hole with it. So that has been very helpful on an ongoing basis to stay in touch with some of these people, because it's basically like you all with Limitless, you have these sessions where you can kind of brainstorm with each other. The support team needs the same type of thing because we're doing things from a different perspective than an advisor. So having people of like kind be able to share with you their trials and tribulations is a great way to give them another way of getting support.
Very good. I appreciate you sharing and glad that, I mean, that trip paid dividends years after. So
it did.
All right. Again, we've got, as we kind of wrap up the presentation part of this conversation here, obviously we have a lot of the resources inside of the Limitless Library. The thing that I would emphasize the most is out of everything, I think it's the easiest part of that is creating the job description, because again, it's just doing the personal time inventory. You'll get the list of what it is that you're looking to outsource and delegate and offload off your plate just by taking a time inventory. Look at your calendar the last 2 weeks and look at the things that are on that. Go through the past, you know, a week worth of email responses that you've sent and think about which one of these emails did not have to come from me that I could have either completely delegated to someone else, or at the very least do what Kathy and I do, or another version of that is do what Kathy and I do periodically throughout the week as she's managing my email inbox. She'll have a handful of emails like, hey, you got this email. How do you want to respond to this? And I'll just narrate a basic response and then she'll be the one that sends it. And the email says Kathy Sutter on behalf of Adam Schmela. So there's no, you know, we're very transparent for the receiver of that email as to who's receiving that. That's a different conversation about email delegation and management, et cetera. But my point in that is, as you're looking to take inventory, the data is right in front of you, my friends. Just go into your CRM, go into your email history, go onto your calendar, look at where you have been spending your time, because that will influence what you will be able to delegate. So creating the job description is the easiest part, I feel, in this entire process. The hardest part is the training and the onboarding and making sure that you're setting that person up for success. The absolute worst thing that you could do is to onboard someone, go through an incredible onboarding process or an interview process, excuse me, go through an incredible interview process and say, oh, Kathy, so glad to have you on board. Here's your desk, here's your phone, here's your computer. Yeah. Godspeed, good luck. Yeah. Right. Please don't do that. And so that's where that's where advisors will sometimes fall and create a little bit of a sour taste in the mouth of the person that they're hiring, especially if the person's remote. Because now there's not even that sense of personal connection sharing an office with someone. They're literally on an island by themselves. So the more remote that person is in the form of, you know, whether it's a hybrid where sometimes they're in the office, sometimes they're remote, or if they're completely remote and they're part-time, I feel it's even more incumbent upon you to ensure that you're giving that person the time to feel as part of the team and let them know how you're defining success in the role and where they're excelling, where they need improvement. And the improvement, again, when we think of how do we make improvement, process, platform, then people. So many times advisors will immediately just jump to, oh, I got the wrong person. Like, well, have we looked in a mirror first and determined what are the structures that we have in place? Did we set this person up to succeed or fail? And that's your responsibility as the advisor. Yeah, sometimes you just get the wrong person on the wrong seat on the bus. And that happens, that goes back to that hire slow, fire quick. But it may also be that it just wasn't the good, the environment wasn't created from the get-go to allow that person to thrive and succeed. And it's something that we're trying, that we've created with John. It's something that we created with Kathy, again, had the benefit of her here in person. And it's something that we are striving, obviously, to accomplish with Kate as well, as she looks to grow into this role. So out of all of this, right, where I'm going with that is with the templates and the tools that you see on the screen here, spend time crafting out what that training plan is going to look like. How much, by when, by 30 days, by 60 days, by 90 days, be clear in what your expectations are of them so that they have a definition of success and they're just not like, what do I do now, right? Kathy, anything that you would add to complement that or to, for either from your perspective in our relationship or as you, from your perspective, as you look to, or as you think to the time that we brought John on board and now bringing Kate on board, anything that you would share in addition to that?
I think I might touch a little bit more on the hire slow part. Because even myself, when I was going through the process, I was like, okay, it's been over a month, now it's 2 months, it's 3 months. It took 4 months before Adam actually hired me. So when you say slow, 4 months to me is a slow process. But as I've come to learn, and having gone through this now with John and with Kate, it is a slow process to find that person that's kind of like your needle in the haystack. Use the Colby, do your due diligence, verify things. Like he said with me, he made me do some forms and documents just to see my attention to detail and such. Have me handwrite letters just to see if I could spell versus using auto check, etc. So it's a slow process to kind of get to that person who fits what you're looking for. If you're in a hurry, if you need someone yesterday, yeah, we needed someone yesterday. We needed Kate 3 months ago. But we took our time, we took our due diligence, and we're hopefully going to find out that she's the greatest fit as John and I are for Adam. So that's something I would guess I would touch on, just because a lot of people tend to put the ad out there, take the first few that come in, and then just kind of roll from there. I think when we posted Kate's position, we didn't get some immediate responses, which is what we were hoping for. And so it took us a little longer to kind of network to find the people that we needed. And we ended up with some two really solid candidates. So at that point, it was kind of in our basket to kind of make the decision, which one did we feel fits best with our firm?
Yeah. Well, I apologize. I said we were going to make up on time here, and I misjudged my calendar or my time. I thought we had an hour for this and then a little bit of Q&A, but I believe we are at time. I see three questions in there. I will respond to those questions and type them out. So I apologize that I did not get to those. But again, I will respond to those directly in Cvent there. So Paul, thank you for the two questions, Sarah. I apologize that I ran over in time here. So I did not honor my promise that I said at the beginning of the time, my apologies, but thank you all for being here, and we'll catch everybody in the next session. So I believe Catherine, right? Anything else that I need to add there?
No, we've got a 15-minute break, and then we're on to the next sessions. Thank you, Adam.
Can we keep this open if people want to stick around for Q&A during that 15-minute break?
If you so choose, that's fine.
Let me hammer through these questions real quick if you guys want to stay on here. So Paul's first question, looking for suggestions in hiring when I have had a bad track record, didn't work out until my last hire in 2016, who probably will retire at the end of the year. I sucked at hiring people. I appreciate your transparency, Paul. That's a hard question to answer just because I don't know what your process looked like. I don't know how thorough you were in your interview process. I don't know what questions you're asking, what tasks you're taking them through, how many conversations you're having with them, where you're searching. It's very difficult for me to ask that or answer that type of question without knowing anything about your process. And understand from your follow-up question there, with a broker-dealer, so cannot use an agency, compliance issues. I get that, and I understand that. Must be a direct hire, which is fine. It would be having to take a much deeper dive into your process. I would tell you to go through looking at the hiring process that is outlined in Limitless and expand upon that. Like Kathy had mentioned, it's not a two conversation. Oh yeah, this feels really, really good. I think it'd be a good fit, and do it completely on the feels. Yeah, you certainly want to feel good about the person and have chemistry and rapport, and you're going to spend time with them. So you want to ensure that you enjoy spending time. But I would be very curious to know more of the competency side of your hiring process and what that process has looked like before I could. So I can't answer your question other than to tell you to go back and reevaluate the thoroughness of your hiring process. So hopefully that helps. I know it probably doesn't directly answer the question, but that's where I was going when I immediately looked at your question. Sarah's question, can you be a little bit more specific about what a 65 CSA versus 85? Yeah, it's based off experience, personality. It's not personal. It's just based off experience and demonstrated competency that they're bringing to the table. Part of it is based off of cost of living, right? You have to take that into consideration when we're hiring for a virtual capacity. Hiring someone in Tennessee without a state income tax, and maybe they're in a rural area of Tennessee and the cost of living is a lot lower, is going to offer, or I should say require, a different wage than hiring someone in LA, to use the other extreme example of that. So that's also part of what that range is. I will also say that the range there is just based compensation. So we have a bonus structure in place for Kate, as well as, I mean, she's got health insurance, I set up with a home office, travel expenses, a $2,000 per year PD budget, personal development budget. I'd have to go through and look at the offer letter, but I mean, holidays, right? There's a decent amount. I think it's a decent amount of above the line benefits that are also in addition to that compensation. Let's see. Paul, I appreciate your comment. Much better process explained here than I used in the past. So go there, go back to the drawing board and be more critical of yourself.
Adam, I did answer some questions, so you might want to look at the answers just to see if there's more that you want to add on to this.
Everybody, if you could ask your questions also in Cvent, that way after this session ends in a couple minutes, Adam and Kathy will still be able to revisit them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Question. Oh, yeah. Questions are closed in Cvent. Single best book Adam has read in this area. Ooh, single best book I've read in this area. Oh. That's a good question. I'm looking at my list right here to see if there's anything. I mean, Extreme Ownership is good from multiple different angles. Who Not How. Who Not How is a really, from the, like the act of delegation and the mindset aspect of it. Who Not How by Dan Sullivan. Start With Why is another good one. Start With Why just in the sense of what you're working for so that you can think about the things that you shouldn't be doing. That's Daniel Pink, I believe. Drive is another one by Daniel Pink. That's a good one. I don't know that I've read any like specific HR books that have been beneficial, but let's see here. Where do you house all your processes, SOPs, videos for future reference? Christian uses Notion. I've tried using Notion. I'm not that tech savvy and don't want to dedicate the time to learning Notion. The thing that I love about Notion is also the thing that I hate about Notion. It can do everything and anything that you want it to do. That's not the best and highest use of my time to figure out how to use Notion. So we have a simpler version. Everything that's client related is in Redtail. Everything that's practice related, like working in the business, is in Redtail. Everything working on the business is in Asana. We house all of our training videos in Loom, and we have all of our, what we consider just our document infrastructure is built in ShareFile. Okay. Come up for air now. Oh, cool. Let's see, just going through the live Q&A that were answered. How does that affect your client relationships? Great answer, Kathy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you assemble a virtual team through Upwork Fiverr? Also a very good answer. Recruiters have their place.
It's
just, we've built such a good network of advisors through my mastermind group. I mean, I'm grateful to have 7 pretty influential and well-known names in my mastermind group, that we all know someone that can introduce us to someone, as well as the social media network that we have, that it got a little bit of a bullhorn there to be able to cast out. But having said that, if you have a very, like the firm that's bringing to life the 2020 money membership that we're launching here in about within the next month, I found them through Upwork because I had an extremely targeted goal. I had an extremely targeted task and project that I wanted to have them hire for. So Upwork was a great way to be able to do that.
Adam, you might run through what the 3 P's are. I've seen a couple of questions come up about the 3 P's.
Yeah, people, process, and platform. Those are basically the 3 areas in a business that people will start looking towards when they find deficiencies or gaps in how the business is performing relative to if they wanted to perform. The mistake that people make is they first, whether it be either through addition or subtraction, they will first go to people. They'll be like, oh, we're overwhelmed. I've got to hire someone. Do you? Hiring someone is extremely expensive. And I'm not just talking financial. I'm talking about the amount of time that goes into that as well. And it's an extremely emotional, like, it's not lost on us here, the firm, that Kate, who is 24, I think, 23, 24, just left a pretty decent firm that had a decent trajectory for her to leave the clients that she was working with there, leave the advisors, leave the network that she had, and start a new career with us. So that's a big commitment. That's a big responsibility for us. So be slow through that process of understanding, if I have a problem, if I have a deficiency, is it the process? Can I reinvent my process? Can I tear it apart and put it back together? Is there efficiency that I can pick up in the process? Is there a different platform that can help? We're looking to change the dictation service that we use as a way to use Fireflies as an AI platform to essentially sit in on every Zoom meeting, take notes for us, condense them down into meeting summaries, and provide all of us our action items. Can that save John and I and Kate now the 5 to 10 minutes of dictation that we have to spend after every client appointment? And can AI do it? So is there a platform that can better serve us? And then look to your team. Conversely, on the other side of that, when you feel like you have to get rid of someone, first go to you. Are you deficient as a leader in that process? Are your platforms deficient? Is your process deficient?